WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A second Rodney King trial is underway in Los Angeles. In this federal case, the four white police officers who were acquitted of criminal charges last spring are accused of violating King's civil rights. A related trial will soon start in Los Angeles when three black men face charges of beating white truck driver Reginald Denny during the riots that followed the acquittal last spring. My guest Willie Williams is the new Los Angeles police chief. He was still the police chief of Philadelphia during the L.A. riots, but he had already agreed to succeed Daryl Gates. Now Williams is trying to improve relations between the police and the community in Los Angeles. I spoke with him earlier today and asked him if he thinks there might be another riot after the verdict in the federal Rodney King case.
This time, I don't believe that we're going to see anything close to the level of the types of disturbances that were here in Los Angeles last April. Being a realist, I'm sure that if the verdicts don't please some individuals or groups of individuals, we could see something from the standpoint of peaceful demonstrations or perhaps isolated incidents or events. But I think that the police department and the other law enforcement agencies and many community groups here in the city of Los Angeles have worked hard to, one, prevent that from occurring or at the least to stop it right away. So I don't think we're going to see any wide-scale riot of the type we had last year, including the level of violence and the loss of property and life.
Now, the Reginald Denny beating trial is about to begin. Do you think that there's going to be any violence after that verdict?
No, I think my response would be similar. I think the mood of the city is different. There's still very difficult opinions and firm opinions on both sides of the aisle. But I believe that the citizens of the city have learned that the actions that occurred last April, you didn't gain anything from them. In fact, we've all suffered losses. So I would certainly hope, although there's no guarantees, that we won't see a repeat of April of 1992.
So what have you been doing to try to prevent a repeat of April 92?
Well, first of all, the police department can't prevent a repeat in terms of an event starting. Law enforcement agencies can and should be charged with suppressing an activity once it begins, being there to save lives, to save property, and make arrests. And we've worked within the Los Angeles Police Department to ensure that all of our people receive unusual occurrence training, understanding how to move in small groups as large groups, how to rescue people that may be isolated from their homes or cars, similar to Mr. Denny. We've also worked to make sure that we're able to use less than lethal and non-lethal tools such as rubber bullets and certain oleoresin sprays, gas sprays, similar to mace, where you have large unruly crowds, but they're not involved in using deadly force against police. Many of our officers have been trained in that as well. But additionally, with the leadership of the mayor here in the city, there's a lot of work going into getting the community ready to not necessarily agree with whatever verdicts come out of the two trials, but to accept them as the American way. And that's not always popular in some homes. But to let the people know that if you don't like their verdict, if you don't think it's correct, then there are nonviolent ways to change the system through the electoral process, through the judicial process, and others. But the main thing is that we're not out here preparing for war. We're preparing for peace. We're trying to ensure that this community is here, it's viable, and it survives beyond these two trials, which will start and end over the next 2 to 3 months.
When the next two verdicts come out, would you like to see the media handle it any differently than the first Rodney King verdict was handled?
Well, I think the verdicts have to be reported, as they were. But I think the media trying to find out, what juror said this and what juror said that. I understand that news is a business, and you have to sell advertising and everything. But I think the media does have a responsibility to think about the overall impact. We just had this unfortunate thing last week where a newspaper reporter faked a picture of some young men with guns saying they were getting ready for the riot. And it turns out he drove them to get the guns. They were turning in the guns. They weren't doing anything of the sort. So I think the media has to think about their impact and what they can do in molding public opinion.
After the riots in Los Angeles last spring, there was a truce between some of the black gangs. How well has that truce held?
in some of the areas where the gangs were in the truce was holding somewhat. It was only a small number of gangs that entered into a truce in the city, not a large or the predominant by any means. In some cases, the gang-on-gang violence has dropped. What has not dropped is that we have seen no corresponding reduction in gang-on-community violence. The people who are the victims of the robberies, the burglaries, the assaults, the business people who are the victims of extortion, women who are the victims of sexual assault and rape, we have not seen a reduction in that level of activity. So while we're pleased that certain members of gangs are not shooting and killing each other, to have a true truce, there must be a truce with the community at large.
After the riots, a lot of people in Los Angeles bought guns. Have there been new problems for the Los Angeles police force because of this new level of gun ownership?
Well, we have major problems with the panic that was created after the riot and really the arming of the citizens of Los Angeles. We have seen that their homicide rate went up last year to nearly 1,100 compared to 1991. It was about a 5% increase. We have seen particularly what we call domestic homicides, where people get involved in arguments, discussions, or fights with a coworker or a family. And instead of walking out the door or maybe getting into a fist fight, they go into the bureau or the desk drawer and they pull out a gun, and one shoots another. We have seen some increase in gang-related homicides. They went up about 8 or 10%, but they only accounted for about 425 of the 1,100 homicides. The majority of the homicides were either handgun or some other type of weapon. So I think we're beginning to see some relationship to the increase in arming. And my other fear is that if there's any kind of small or large disturbance or whatever, that the business people who now purchase the arms, if they have an argument with a customer or are afraid of someone that doesn't look like their customers when they walk in the door, that they're going to pull out this weapon or confront a police officer with these weapons. So it's a very dangerous and volatile situation we have here.
What can you do to try to discourage people from buying or using arms?
Well, I have always been a strong proponent that I think we have to have very strict and tough gun control laws and measures. I think we need to have a longer waiting period to ensure that only people who absolutely can show overwhelming necessity to have a weapon, have a gun. I don't think that we need to have these assault weapons and assault rifles either imported into this country or sold in this country. They're only used to hunt human beings. They're not used for the sport of hunting. And I think we need to examine the type of small arms that are sold in this country. I recognize that that is not a popular position to take in many quarters, but as a law enforcement official who has seen death and destruction both inside and outside two cities for 30 years, that is my position.
Willie Williams, the Los Angeles police chief, is my guest. The Los Angeles police force has had a particularly bad reputation for its treatment of people of color, particularly young people of color. How much of that reputation do you think is deserved?
Well, I think the reputation that the department has is the same that most major cities had, including the city I came from, Philadelphia, New York, Washington, Chicago. But the department's reputation, I think, is not quite as deserved as the national media has played it up. But you, for example, Rodney King, clearly that was an event that disturbed not just the country but the world. But that was not reflective of all the officers in Los Angeles, no more so than the events that occurred in Philadelphia in 1985 with the MOVE bombing were reflective of all the men and women in the Philadelphia Police Department. I think the real issue is that through my leadership and others, that we've set a new tone that proning out, laying down, disrespecting particularly young males of African-American and Hispanic descent simply because they are in cars or they're walking in a neighborhood will not be tolerated, that supervisors will be held accountable for training and supervising their employees, and that disciplinary action from reprimands, training to dismissal and or arrest can result if this process does not change. At the same time, we're asking leaders in the community to work and support us to explain to young people that there may be occasions when police will stop you, when police will temporarily detain you, will ask for identification, but there are certain guidelines. So it's an educational process that's going on both sides. But the blatant improper tactics will not be accepted during this change.
Do you think that police officers today act more out of fear for their lives than they did in the days when you were on the beat, knowing that so many more people have guns now than ever before?
I don't believe that police officers act out of fear for their lives. The streets are more dangerous. I mean, the officers recognize that. I mean, I recognize that as chief in Philadelphia when I ordered all of our officers to wear bulletproof vests back in 1989. We ordered the automatic weapons for our officers the same as we have here in Los Angeles. But I don't think they act day to day out of fear for their lives, although there are some that will say that that is a reason, but that is not my belief.
You came from a tough city, Philadelphia, and you've moved to a tough city, Los Angeles. Los Angeles is a much bigger city. And I think there's probably a lot of differences between the two cities, and I'm interested in some of those differences that you're having to deal with. Maybe we could start, since gangs are such trouble in Los Angeles, and there's, I know, a lot of gang violence in Philadelphia as well. Could you perhaps compare the kinds of gang styles that you have to deal with as police chief?
Well, I think that the gangs here in Los Angeles are different from those in any other part of this country. We have gangs that we have generations, both fathers and sons, in the same gangs. 75 to 85% of the gang membership are over 21 to 25 years of age, compared to Philadelphia and most cities where they are youth-led, or the old heads, as we call them, are 21, 22, and 23. In addition, we have gangs that some fight for the traditional turf areas, others are involved in drugs, and others are involved in traditions that lead back to either their homes in Central and South America or their parents' or grandparents' homes, values that are carried here to the United States. So it's significantly different in the numbers. We're talking about 80, 85,000 people who are listed as gang members, perhaps one-third of them involved in violent activity. Philadelphia and most other cities have not seen anything close to this. So just locking them up, arresting them is not the result that's going to take. Social service intervention is going to take, educational intervention is going to take, jobs intervention, along with tough, no-nonsense law enforcement where necessary to try to make a difference.
In the meantime, what are some of the differences between the tactics that you're using in Los Angeles to try to stop gang violence and the tactics that you used in Philadelphia?
Well, there's not a major difference. The violent gangs, we started in Philadelphia a couple of years ago, utilizing the federal laws and charging some gangs with being involved in organized crime activity similar to the way we dealt with the traditional mafia in Philadelphia. That was successful and is ongoing there, and we've begun about 7 or 8 months ago a federal task force here in Los Angeles where we're approaching using the same approach with some of the violent gangs, and we'll be making arrests in the upcoming months. Some of the differences here are that you just can't approach the gangs with offers of part-time jobs in the fast food market or things like this that you could in some other cities to give the young people $10 or $20. You're talking about men primarily with families, with children who may be in gangs. So I don't have all the answers, but it's much more difficult to come up with a short or long-term solution because of the ages, because of the length of involvement, and because of the sheer numbers here in Los Angeles that you did not have in Philadelphia.
No, in Los Angeles, the police force relies a lot on helicopters, much more than in Philadelphia and much more, I think, than in any other major urban center in the United States. How do you like using those? I know for a lot of people it strikes them as being very big brotherish and just very, very disturbing.
Well, no, I don't think that the helicopters are big brotherish at all, because I think I'm probably known as one of the most liberal chiefs in the country. The helicopters are used because we have a city of 475 square miles. We have a police-to-citizen ratio of 2.2 per 1,000, which is roughly half of what Philadelphia was. And in terms of the ratio, and the area is more than two times the size of the city of Philadelphia. So the helicopters are necessary to ensure the safety of the citizens here in the city of Los Angeles to move across great areas and miles very, very quickly in all types of weather and avoid the horrendous jams that you have on the freeways. The helicopters are not used to spy on anyone. The helicopters are used for public safety patrol. They're used when we're involved in pursuit of dangerous criminals. You can look in backyards. You can follow people along the freeways over long distances where you cannot deal with them on the ground. We usually only have three or four helicopters in the air at any one time anyway.
With the new Rodney King trial underway now in Los Angeles, is there a lot of debate within the Los Angeles police force about the guilt or innocence of the four accused officers?
I think there's a lot of debate within the department about the guilt or innocence and whether they should be tried again. I do not get involved in that because the officers, while they've been suspended without pay, for legal reasons, have not been separated from the department. And depending upon the outcome of this trial, I may be called upon to make that final decision. So I intentionally do not express my personal opinions and don't get into any type of public debate. But among the officers and supervisors and people in the department, there still is, you know, there's great debate about whether they, you know, were innocent or guilty, whether they should or should not have done what they were accused of doing. And I guess that's going to go on for quite a few years.
What did you make of the record Cop Killer by Ice-T, which was so controversial? Did you take it personally? And do you think a lot of cops on your force thought that it was a call to go out and kill cops?
I did not like the record. And I publicly said I did not approve of it. I didn't take it personally. But I think that the record industry, the music video industry, has a responsibility to think more about the community. I mean, when you look at our music videos, what they're doing to the women of America, I think, is a disgrace in terms of the way they show women as sexual objects, scantily clad, things to be used and abused whenever you want on the movies as well as in the videos. And I think that the record Cop Killer was just an extension of talking about the violence in America, the hatred. Artists are allowed under, you know, their First Amendment rights to express their views and opinions, but I think there has to be a greater level of responsibility. And it's just my personal opinion, you know, as an adult, as a law enforcement officer, and as a parent, and as a minority member of this country, that record was not the most responsible way to express one's views.
My guest is L.A. Police Chief Willie Williams. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Willie Williams is my guest, the Los Angeles Police Chief. I'm interested in finding out a little bit about your life and how you became a member of the police force. You grew up in Philadelphia. What kind of neighborhood did you come of age in?
I grew up in West Philadelphia, out near 56 and Girard Avenue, 56 and Hafford Avenue. I'm the oldest of seven children. I was raised in a home with my mother and my father and my grandmother. And I was a product of the public school system in West Philadelphia and graduated from Overbrook High School. I was a Boy Scout for a couple of years, and this led what I consider to be a normal childhood.
Well, from what I read about you, I know that you had pneumonia twice as a child, and I think both times you were administered last rites. I believe you also had asthma when you were young. Were you very sickly during much of your childhood?
Yeah, I was. You wouldn't know it if you look at me today, but I was one of those skinny, sickly kids that no one expected to survive. But thanks to, you know, modern medicine, I survived three bouts with pneumonia. I almost lost my left hand in an industrial accident at 14, and I have about 80 stitches and so forth. But in spite of those things, as a youngster, you don't think about those things. Maybe as an adult, I'd never recover from them, but as a kid, there's this part of growing up.
Was it your ambition to become a cop?
No. When I joined the police department in Philadelphia, I didn't know another police officer. I took the job because in my family, there was no thoughts of not working as you became a young adult. I didn't know people actually didn't work. It may sound a little naive, but that's true. And I was working as a mess clerk messenger at age 18, and I was making $2,600 a year, not a month, but a year. And the Philadelphia Police Department was paying $5,000 a year. I took the test, I scored in the 90s, and I was hired about 4 months later, and my income doubled. And it wasn't until 2, 3, 4 years after being on the department that through the leadership of a Lieutenant Maury Green and a Captain Frank Walker, that a group of us began to study. And then I decided I wanted to stay in the department, make it a career, and began to study for the promotional exams that followed over the next 25 years.
Were you exposed to many black officers when you were young?
No, not really. No, I wasn't exposed to, as a youngster, to that many police officers at all. The only contact I can really remember is when they'd come into our neighborhood and turn off the fire hydrant during the summer. And once, when my bike was stolen, an officer drove me around looking for the bike as a youngster, but didn't have a lot of contact with police at all, no.
So from afar, did you feel one way or another about them, that they were good guys or bad guys, people to look up to, people to be feared?
I grew up with the feeling that the police officers were good guys. I didn't have any experiences that told me differently during my younger days.
So no one in your family, none of your friends, not you, were ever harassed by police?
No, not to my knowledge.
When you entered the police force, what year was it in Philadelphia?
I joined in February 1964.
Were there many other black police officers at the time?
Oh, sure. There were quite a few black police officers in Philadelphia. That time, the department was about 20-21% black officers. And, you know, we had them in our academy class, in our platoons, and in our divisions where we worked.
Did you feel that you faced any racism on the force?
Early on, not directly, but over the next couple of years, when we began to study for exams, through the leadership of various organizations in the department, we recognized that the department, some of the tests which the city admitted had cultural bias in the way that the exams were written. I remember back in the early 60s, there was an unwritten rule that, that black officers couldn't work together in cars. I didn't know what we were going to do if we got together, but we couldn't. And it was only through decisions by certain supervisors that they didn't care about this unwritten rule. They were going to assign people based on experience and qualifications, that these processes begun to change. And as I became a supervisor, a sergeant, a lieutenant, you know, I made it my business with the support of others that these types of rules and regulations, whether written or unwritten, were just going to have to change, and became one of those champions of that change.
Your predecessor, Daryl Gates, is now a talk show host. Do you listen to his show, and does he talk about you on it?
No, I haven't. Daryl comes on in the middle of the afternoon, and I'm usually at a meeting or something. But the feedback I have is that Daryl doesn't talk much about the police department at all. And we have never had anything but a very cordial and professional relationship during the transition and since he's left office and since I've started. But that time of the afternoon, I'd love to be able to take a little time out and listen to the radio, but usually I'm very, very busy in the middle of the afternoon.
How much interaction have you had with him?
Well, I've met Daryl, I guess, 4, 5, 6 times since I left office at social events. One time we ran into each other on the street, and we have a good relationship. We have no problems at all, and I've told people before, if I thought I had to call him up to ask something, I'm not so proud that I wouldn't pick up the phone and say, Daryl, I need to know this or that, and if my doors are open, if he needs something from me.
Could you ever see yourself hosting a talk show?
No, I don't think so. No, I'm living in a talk show land, but over 30 years in policing, that'll be enough.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Willie Williams is the Los Angeles Police Chief. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.